Hey everyone, welcome back to Citywide Blackout, your home for music, movies, and more. I'm your host, Max Bowen. In this episode, Jessica Victoria joins me to talk about how the legends of King Arthur have influenced her music, particularly her upcoming new album, set to be released in early May. She's performed all over the place, including for Pope John Paul II, and she talks about some of the other memorable shows she's had over the years.
My next guest, well, I have been very, very much looking forward to this because this description comes right from the site, whose music is a mystical wood where the knights of the classical world meet folk singer-songwriting damsels and wizards of yore for coffee brewed in Avalon. You can't get a better description than that. I'm talking to Dr. Jessica Victoria. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much, Max, for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Mm-hmm. And there was so much to talk about, Jessica, because your resume is, quite frankly, it's astonishing. I am very impressed by just everything you've done. You have actually performed for Pope John Paul II at the Vatican.
Yes, that was amazing. How
do you top that? Where do you go from there?
Yeah, it was a pretty amazing experience. It was kind of like I had to pinch myself and make sure that I was actually doing it. Being there performing at a private audience was something that I will never, ever forget.
Did you get the chance to talk to him?
I did. Ooh. I did. Yes. Yes. And wow. I just,
yeah.
Words can't really describe. He has such a presence about him. Mm-hmm. Gentleness and... It's just, yes, it was amazing.
I would be so tempted to just like fall to like one knee and just like swear fealty to him.
Yes, exactly. It's just, you know, I was thinking as I was with him, it's like, okay, if this is a tiny, tiny bit of what The Last Judgment could be like, then I'm really excited for that day.
Ah, exactly. And because now you know the Pope, you have that in.
Yeah, oh, he's a remarkable man.
Oh, definitely. Was that basically just like the career high for you in terms of getting to perform for him? I know you've done like tons of like other shows, but what would you say are some of like the big top ones for you?
You know, every performance has a fire of its own. Mm-hmm. And frankly, yes. I mean, that was unique. That was an experience that can never be topped in a way. But also, I would say some of my performances that I've loved the most have been some of my smaller, more intimate performances, because in those performances, the audience was right with me in the music. Sometimes you get this zone where you know that people are in the story with you. For me, every song is a story that I can share with people. And sometimes it's in those really intimate scenes, those really small venues, where you really feel that people are there with you. So some performances that I've done, which have been smaller recitals, have really helped bring that alive for me. And then some of the bigger venues have really been exciting for me. Actually, one of them right there in Boston at Jordan Hall. I love performing in Jordan Hall. It's one of my favorite venues. And performing with orchestra in Jordan Hall is just amazing, because there's this synergy that happens between the orchestra and the artist. And, well, of course, everybody's artists, but the orchestra and me and the audience is just like, whoa, amazing.
I have been to a few shows at Jordan Hall because I used to live very, very close to it. So,
oh, cool.
And I would say I definitely like classical music. I'm not really like a devotee of it, so I couldn't like name artists, for example. But I have had the experience, and it's such a cool thing being there, you know? You just get so drawn into all the performances.
Yeah, and the acoustics are great. The space itself is really wonderful. Probably one of my favorite times being there was performing Bach, because, you know, Bach is such a passionate composer. There's so much passion and fire in the music, and being able to perform there with a smaller chamber orchestra was one of my favorite performances ever.
Mm-hmm. You sound like you're a very like well-traveled person. You've performed all over the place. Is there any place that you have not been to yet that is kind of on your musical must-do list?
Oh my goodness, there's so many places that I want to go. I would love to visit the South Pacific. I haven't been to the South Pacific, and I think it would be just amazing to be able to perform with the ocean waves and my harp and me and maybe some electric guitar and some drums. Beachside performance would be amazing. I would also love to be able to go to Wales. I've been to lots of places in the UK, but I have not yet been to Wales, and I especially would like to go to Carmarthen because that's a historically important place for my new release. So maybe during the album tour, hopefully when things get back to normal, I'll get to go to Wales.
Okay, let's talk about the new album. But what can people look forward to with the new album?
So the album will come out on May 1st. Mm. And so I'm really looking forward to May is one of my favorite months. So to be able to have the album come out at the very beginning is really great. This is an Arthurian Celtic fusion project. I love it because it combines lots of different genres. It combines jazz, rock, classical, Celtic, early music, all to tell the story of King Arthur. And as you were saying, the album is called Songs of the Summer Realm. And it's the reason I named it that is because of an Arthurian cycle that I love called the Pendragon Cycle by Stephen Lawhead. And he talks about Britain as the summer kingdom and Arthur as the summer lord. And so I wanted the album to be named after the summer realm.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did Arthurian lore come to be such a prominent part of your music?
So I love, as I said earlier, I love stories. Mm-hmm. And one of the richest parts of sort of the story realm is the Arthurian realm, because there's so many different levels. You've got everything. You've got great battles, magic, heroism, intrigue, everything comes together. And I wanted to delve deeper into that because there are so many different legends, some of which are really literature based, some of which are more historically based. We actually have a chronicle that gives a date to the death of Arthur and Mordred as being in 537. So we have some interesting connections with history. And I thought that it would be a really great source for me as a songwriter. And in my mind, at a given time, there are always lots of projects kind of waiting to be born and thought of. And so this was one that was just clamoring for attention. I had to do it.
Mm. What was the first Arthurian story you ever read?
Oh, my goodness. I think the first one that I read was Idylls of the King by Tennyson. Mm. And I was just drawn to the beauty of the poetry and the sound of the words themselves. And so, I had to make that part of the project. And so a couple of the tracks are taken from the Idylls of the King. Mm.
Whenever they do like another King Arthur movie, they really need to hire you to like fact check the script.
I expect
you'd be like, okay, that's wrong. That's wrong. That never happened. That's wrong. Who's this?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's really interesting because a lot of the Arthurian movies that we have are really offshoots of the later French tradition. Hmm. And so we have this sort of kind of soap opera ishness in soap opera and armor is what I like to call it sometimes, but but I mean, it's great. There are some really wonderful books that are based on the French tradition and some beautiful films as well, but I wanted to kind of go the less conventional route and talk more about the Celtic Arthur, the earlier version, the one that people probably don't know as much.
Hmm. So is this like the original version of Arthur? I know nothing about this. So
there, the first kind of time that we hear of Arthur in any significant way was a part of a chronicle by Geoffrey of Monmouth, who was writing in around 1136. And he talked about Arthur mostly as a military genius and as a conqueror, someone who was able to sort of save his native land of Britain from the invading Saxons. Now, Monmouth made up some pretty out there things, like according to him, Arthur conquered Rome and some of Italy as well. So a lot of that, is not something that can historically be validated. But his history was the beginning of later legends of Arthur that really ended up diverging from the French tradition later on.
As I mentioned before, you are a doctor. You have your doctorate in musical arts from the Catholic University of America and also a master's in music in vocal performance from New England Conservatory. What's
Yay,
up, Boston?
Go Boston.
Yeah, what's up, Boston? We love Boston.
One of my favorite cities ever.
Oh, yep. Really? Really?
Yes.
Okay. When's the last time you were in Boston?
So last time I was in Boston was for a songwriting workshop. Mm-hmm. And it was at the Passham Center in Cambridge. And I got to see some of my friends as well. So I got to stay with them, go to a songwriting workshop. And that was earlier this year, actually. So not too long ago. So yeah, I try to get back whenever I can.
I love Boston. I lived there for about like 8 years and I just mm-hmm. adore the city. I will never live anywhere yeah. else.
I know, me too. I love that city and I would want to go back there as much as possible. One of my biggest dreams is to sing in Symphony Hall with orchestra and like a rock band at the same time. It'd be amazing.
When that happens, I will definitely be there.
Yay!
I think my favorite part of the city, aside from the art scene, of course, is mm-hmm. the food.
Yes.
You cannot
absolutely.
Go wrong with traveling Boston on mm-hmm. your stomach. It's the best
oh,
thing.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I love the Modern Bakery in Little Italy. Mm. That's amazing. I love that place. And lots of other ones, too.
There's a place called Little Steve's. It is near Berklee College of Music.
Uh-huh.
And it's been there for, you know, God knows how many years. Years and years and years. My opinion, my humble opinion, it's the best pizza place in town.
Mm, okay.
Which I know that will start. That will actually start fights now because I've said that.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure everybody has their ideas.
Oh, definitely, definitely, definitely. But going back to your education, would you say you are more? Would you say when it comes to music that it's entirely like a classroom education, or what have you learned by being kind of like, you know, on the road doing shows and performing?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's a great question. I mean, because really, like, school is great. You learn a lot of really important things in school, but some things you just learn from doing it from real life. And I think some of the most fun things that I've learned have been actually from other musicians in the studio about how to work together, how to improvise, how to give people their space when they need musical space to improvise. Just some of those group dynamics have really, I've really learned those in the studio and also on the road with performing with different people. Also a lot of the business side, because I did not have any music business as an undergrad or during my master's. I did take a nonprofit management class in my doctoral program, but I had to learn a lot of the business end just by doing it. And that's the quickest and most efficient way, because you just gotta, you have no other choice.
Yeah. I hear that all the time, that for musicians, the hardest thing is learning how to like market yourself,
yeah.
to promote yourself and to book yourself. Mm-hmm. It is the trickiest thing in the world, but many of them are getting very good at it because, you know, the days I think of the big labels coming in, saving you and doing all that for you, those are, mm-hmm. you know, out of. Done.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, that's not the scene anymore.
Exactly. So you're definitely seeing a lot of like self-starters out there who are taking things by the reins themselves and saying, okay, well, I will market myself. I will learn what I have to learn and do my own thing.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, there's pluses and minuses to anything, really. And one of the pluses to really learning all that business on my own has been really being able to shape what I want to do. Try to figure out who is it that really I'm helping with my music, because I think sometimes as musicians we forget that music can be a solution. It's not an extra thing. It's something that that people need in some way in their lives, and trying to figure out how I can fulfill that need and still do the things that I love has been a great journey for me.
I think for me music is almost an escape, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because, like you said, it's all about stories, you know. Mm-hmm. And the songs mm-hmm. tell the stories, or they set the scene.
Going back to the Celtic tradition of the bard, you know, the bard was someone who gave that escape around the fire. People would listen to tales of battles, but then also those tales could influence what the king decided to do or what the tribe decided to do. So I think there's this like really cool synergy between escaping into another place and then bringing that back.
Who is your favorite escape artist?
Ooh, that is so hard to answer. I think it depends on what mood I'm in.
Okay. You know what? Give me three that you really like.
As far as somebody who I think is more of an alchemist that really brings you into a place of another world and another atmosphere, I would have to say musically, it's going to be Chopin.
Mm.
Chopin is, he uses so many colors and he just draws you into this swirl of a completely different place, especially in his nocturnes. So mysterious. So I think that definitely would have to be, he'd have to be in there. I think another person that I really love is, she's an author, Juliette Marillier. She embraces this idea of mythic history as well. And she's written some amazing novels about early Ireland. So like 6th-7th century kind of places. And so those take me on journeys that I could just go on forever. And then finally, I would say another author, Gerard Manley Hopkins, because his poems are so full of innovative and colorful use of language. And a lot of the time he even makes up his own words. And so you just get this sense of escaping into someplace completely new and beautiful.
I want to play this game. so for me, one of them would definitely be Lindsay Stirling. Her music is kind of this, it's just like electro violin, sort of techno pop fusion.
Yeah. I've heard her actually.
Creates worlds. I listen to her music. I cannot help but create a world in that music. It's just, it's such a strong visual thing too. I just absolutely love it. One of my musical bucket list things is to see her live. So hopefully someday. Another one would actually also be an author. His name is Jonathan Mayberry. And he does a lot of thrillers. It's sort of like a high-tech black ops thriller. I have most of his books and the audiobooks. I was curious about your instrument of choice, the harp. How did you pick that? How did that kind of be what you used?
That's a really it's a really good question, because so when I was little, I tried lots of things, just like any little one would do. And I remember at one point, my mom's like, all right, you've got, you know, you're doing ballet, you're doing piano, you're doing voice. You just need to like pick a couple.
No.
and my parents, I love they've been so supportive throughout all these years. And she actually kind of helped me to kind of like focus myself a little bit. And so I started out with violin. And I was in my violin teacher's studio, and I would always go to the piano, and she's like, have you ever thought about getting her piano lessons instead of violin? So that's what led me to piano. But all the years I was playing the piano, I loved the sounds, and it was more like a tool. Like I'll sit at the piano and kind of think about ideas or maybe a chord progression or something, but it didn't ever really feel like a part of me. But ever since I was really little, I loved the sound of the harp. I always felt like it was a really magical, just beautiful sound. In the last few years, as I started to really explore the songwriting part of me, I just really felt drawn to this instrument, because it seemed like a lot more than a tool for me to write with. It seemed kind of like its own person, its own contributor. And so when I sit down at the harp and I start to write a song, I just never know what's going to come out, because sometimes the instrument itself will just kind of help my fingers like figure out what the next melody is going to be. I think the other thing that really drew me to the harp as a songwriting companion is the associations with kind of mystical, magical worlds that I love so much, because there's this really long tradition of the harp being the bardic instrument.
I think you're actually the first harpist I've ever spoken to.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
cool.
Pretty sure the first harpist. So good to check that off the list. What about the harp has been a stickier for you? Like I suppose like the violin, the piano. What has kept that as your main tool?
You know, it just feels natural to play. So the harp is a very physical. So my harp is pretty small. It's a Celtic harp. And that's different from one of those big pedal harps that you would see in an orchestra. So mine is, just a smidge shorter than I am. And I'm pretty small myself. So, so the harp, it sits between your knees. And then you kind of embrace the harp. It's very close to you. And it just has this kind of a shape that is kind of comforting, I guess, in a way. I don't know how to explain it. But also the sounds. There's so many timbres that you can get with a harp. My harp has a really rich bass, which is kind of unusual for harps this size. And so the lower notes really resound. You can really feel the resonance of the instrument against your skin, against your knees, against your hands as you're playing. So it's a very physical instrument. And then you can also enjoy the top notes, which are so joyous. They have these very tinkly, kind of scintillating sound. So there's a lot of diversity and depth that you can get in such a small instrument. And then the sounds themselves are so silvery. They just, to me, it gives a sheen and an otherworldliness to the music.
I will never get over hearing sound described as tinkly. That's perfect. I love it. Is music like a full-time job for you?
Yes, it is. I do music pretty much all the time. So performing, recording, writing, and teaching. That's what I do. And I'm really, really fortunate that I get to share music with my students. I direct a voice program at a small university. So even when I'm teaching what I love.
How would you say is your teaching style?
It's very interactive. It's very student focused. I always tell them, I'm not here to form you into something. I'm here to help you figure out what you are and what you want to say. So I ask a lot of questions. I make them think and answer and take responsibility for their own formation. And I come along with them to give them ideas and help. But I always tell my students, if you succeed, it's you. If you don't succeed, it's you. I'm here. I'm here for you to help you get there.
Do you ever have students who kind of walk in and think that they're going to be the next, you know, big thing, whatever the big thing is right now?
Yes. Mm. Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, do you ever have to kind of like talk them down, or do you let them like keep the dream because let them fly?
You know what? I think that it's really important to keep dreams alive, but to also help them to realize that they have a gift that is unique. They're not just going to be the next, I don't know, Mariah Carey or the next Taylor Swift or whatever, because they have something else that's different, that's awesome to give. So I always emphasize their uniqueness as musicians. And I fuel the fire of that dream, but I also want them to realize that ultimately they're going to be the one who has something unique to say. And their voice, each person's voice is unique and irreplaceable. And so it's their job to find that voice within themselves and give it to the world.
Now, are you yourself still learning?
I always learn. Yep.
Good answer. I like that.
I always learn. I mean, there's just so much to learn. And sometimes I learn that from my students, from my listeners, from other musicians, from just the most random thing. I mean, well, not really random, but things that you wouldn't necessarily expect to learn from. That's the kind of thing that I will do many times, find things in different disciplines and be really excited about it and apply it to music.
I'd mentioned earlier about some of your like educational accomplishments, but there's actually a lot more to it than that. I also saw that you have a bachelor's degree in music and foreign languages from the University of New Mexico, where you graduated summa cum laude, because you're not, you know, awesome enough already. You gotta have this too.
Thank you. Yeah, New Mexico is my home. I was born there, and you know, the green chili is in my blood, and so I was a Lobo. Go Lobos for my undergrad.
You know, you mentioned earlier about getting all kinds of different like advice from people that you're like always learning. What would you say is the best advice you've gotten as a professional musician that sort of contributes to that career?
The advice that has really helped me, if I could condense it, because there's a lot of good advice, is tell the story. Because at the end of the day, when you're on stage and you want to be a window so that the audience can see through you into a new world, you've got to be able to tell the story with not just the words, but the colors of your voice, the colors of the timbre of your instrument, the way you hold, you know, the way you gesture with your body, the way that you're open to the audience and the energy that they give you. So yeah, that advice is advice that I try to follow every time I perform.
Do you ever get nervous performing?
Oh yes. I get nervous every time, like every performance. Before every performance, I am very nervous.
And how do you conquer that nervousness?
Well, that is a really good question. I have a system that has worked really well for me, and actually a system that it can be condensed into like 30 seconds before I go on stage. And it includes breathing. It includes really being clear about my intention, actually letting the tension out of my body, like being able to just let go of all of the tightening of the muscles. And then also being able to find that center from which I sing, this idea of like being rooted, being able to be, to have a foundation for what I'm giving. It's more detailed than that, but it's a system that has been really great for me because it's given me steps to follow that helps me focus.
I hope the listeners are actually like home, like writing this down, because this is some solid advice.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been helpful for me, and I teach it to my students. It's been really great. I actually was given that system by a mentor of mine, who is amazing. His name is Noah Kageyama. He's a performance psychologist, actually, and a Juilliard-trained violinist. And he has some really great resources out there for any musician who's interested in performing and the psychological aspects of it.
When the new album is released in May, do you have tours planned? I know things are kind of like up in the air right now, but do you think you'll be doing some shows?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so things kind of really got discombobulated with everything going on right now. But I hope to be able to have some reconfirmations of things for the album release tour, and I'll definitely keep you posted as things hopefully get back to normal.
And in the meantime, folks, you can definitely check out Jessica's work at jessicavictoria.com. You can find her music on your various musical listening platforms, Spotify, and all the rest. And Jessica, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate this.
Thank you so much, Max, for having me. And I hope to see you all online and via social media.
Hi, this is singer Kate Eppers, and you're listening to Citywide Blackout.
Well, folks, that brings this episode to a close. Big thanks to Jessica for joining me, and you, the listeners, for tuning in each and every week. Find me on Spotify, Podbean, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and every Saturday at 10 p.m. on Boston Free Radio. Follow me on Facebook under Citywide Blackout, Twitter, Instagram, Citywide Max. And now, two songs from Jessica Victoria, Love Charm, followed by Some Songs Are for Crying. Keep those ears open.
can't believe you're gone. The coats in the closet still smell like you. I still play your favorite song. How do you still enchant me tonight? To music's mirror I'm spellbound. Familiar melodies you would see reflect what my heart thought it found. Some songs are for dancing, some are for singing together, but some songs loving means letting you